We'll call the Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting to order. Chairman Reedy will not be with us today. He has broke down on the side of I-35. He sent his best. So, Mr. Secretary, we'll do the roll call.
We'll begin with roll call. As you mentioned, Chairman Reedy's going to be absent. It looks like Committee Member Collier is also absent, but we do have a quorum.
Very good. Number two is election of officers. This is our annual exercise of making sure we have leadership. So, what's y'all's pleasure? Anybody? What?
Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, you said you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
We can, so we got a chairman, a vice chairman, and a secretary. Or if you would like, we can wait till the next meeting when Jim's here. We just have to do this annually, so doesn't matter how we do it.
It'd be my preference to table it until all the members are here.
I like that.
I agree.
So that's your motion?
That's my motion.
Second.
And there's a second. Any discussion? It is tabled. Oh, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We will table that to the next meeting.
Item number three is the adoption of the September 22nd, 2016 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
I know everybody read them. Did anybody have anything?
No, I'll move to approve the minutes.
Second. Got a motion and a second? Any discussion?
Who made this?
Not hearing any discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item number four is report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual, including but not limited to A, basic wildland overview, course instructor information, outline and reference list, B, basic fire inspector curriculum reference list, and C, hazmat incident commander reference list.
So now we can get to business. Grace?
Good morning. Grace Wilson, Curriculum Development Specialist. So the first thing that you'll see in your packet is the basic wildland firefighter curriculum documents were updated. The NFPA standard was updated. There's a 2016 edition of NFPA 1051. So that first document on page 9 is the curriculum outline, which has the recommended hours. It really wasn't changed, except that we decided to add in a value for performance skills, and so all of the other values had to kind of shift a little bit. So the next couple of documents, since this is a voluntary certification, we're moving away from doing the standard or the longer curriculum outlines. And you've seen this before when we did the update for incident safety officer, and we also did one for a driver operator aerial. So this is like the new format that we're doing. So we have the course instructor information, which is 2 pages, and then on page 12, just an overview. And I don't know what else to say about that. it's just kind of basic information informing people that there is no curriculum and you have to develop your own now using the standard. And then the last document on page 13 is the reference list. Oh, no, wait. Where's the reference list?
It is on 13. Oh, no, that's inspector.
For inspector.
Well, we have a reference list. I'm not sure.
Oh, you said.
I guess it didn't make it into the into the document. So I'll be sure to get that and make some copies and bring it over.
Do you want to see that before you vote on it?
Was there anything added to it or updated?
Yeah, things were updated. You know, as documents were updated, we just incorporate the new additions. Most of these documents, I believe, for wildland were not updated because they're all coming from NWCG, and I guess that not that much has changed. So maybe some links to online resources were updated, things like that.
Before they vote on this agenda item, why don't we see if we can get them a copy?
Okay.
Just so that y'all can see it.
Yeah.
And that way, you'll have everything in front of you.
Shall we move on? Okay.
Certainly.
All right. The next thing, where are we now? Page 13, basic fire inspector reference list. So we had to update this reference list primarily because that second reference down, which is called fire inspection and code enforcement, that's our IFSTA training manual. It's updated. There's a new 8th edition. So we wanted to include that, but then we realized that this 8th edition doesn't have basic hazardous materials information. So that's why we had to add the hazardous materials text. And then there's one other reference that was updated, plans examiner down towards the bottom. There was a new edition that came out.
Did the IFSTA thing indicate why they didn't have hazmat in it, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe to sell more books.
I second that motion.
Right?
You're so brutally honest.
So, I guess, do we want to wait and get that reference list?
Yeah, why don't we hold off on a vote on this, and I'll, if you don't mind going over.
I don't mind.
As soon as you're done with your presentation,
yeah,
here,
sure.
Get it.
Because I'm assuming we can approve all at once, can't we, since it's on the same agenda.
It's number four.
Okay. So we'll come back to that once we get that reference list.
Okay.
Give everybody a chance to see it.
Sure. The last thing. One more thing. We have a hazardous materials incident commander reference list updated.
Mm-hmm.
We added a couple of texts there in the middle. They're operations level texts. We realized that we didn't have any, that we just had tech level. So we wanted to add some at the operations level. And does anybody have any questions before I go make a few copies?
Good. Everybody's good?
Mm-hmm.
We're good. So we'll move on to 5 and then come back.
Item number 5, discussion and possible action regarding Chapter 425 fire service instructors, including but not limited to 425.1, minimum standards for fire service instructor certification, 425.3, minimum standards for fire service instructor 1 certification, 425.5, minimum standards for fire service instructor 2 certification, and 425.7, minimum standards for fire service instructor 3 certification, and 425.9, minimum standards for master fire service instructor 3 certification. And 425.11, International Fire Service Accreditation Congress, or IFSEC seal.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is kind of a combination of things. On page 17, what you're seeing there is we were updating some language that needed to be updated as far as the reference. What, just as kind of a heads up toward the future, what we're going to try to do, I think, is move away from being quite as specific when we reference something from somewhere else, because every time, if we get too specific, every time it changes over there and we forget to change it, we're like in this area here, we've got out of date language. So we're going to probably be a little bit more general with our referencing, which is kind of what you see here. We didn't put that it's number 47 or 48, whatever, that kind of thing. We'll show the section and the chapter that it's in. We also changed in the very first line there in 425.3, we're trying to change some of that language to be, we have about a dozen different ways we say this from one chapter to the other. And so we're, as we begin our review this year, and y'all will be seeing more of this as we go along later this year, as we're reviewing all of our chapters as required, we'll try to make this kind of language a little bit more standardized from one chapter to the next. Page 18, same thing. We're removing that or updating that language there, and as well on number 19 or page 19, also changing the reference to a bachelor's degree, correcting the grammar.
Have to be grammatically correct.
Yeah.
We've been working on this for 22 years that I know of. job security. Any discussion? Is there a motion to accept the change?
Move to approve.
Motion and a second?
I'll second.
All right. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 6, discussion and possible action regarding Chapter 431, fire investigation, including but not limited to Subchapter A, minimum standards for arson investigator certification, 431.1, minimum standards for arson investigation personnel, 431.1, minimum standards for basic arson investigator certification, 431.5, minimum standards for intermediate arson investigator certification, 431.7, minimum standards for advanced arson investigator certification, 431.9, minimum standards for master arson investigator certification, 431.11, minimum standards for arson investigator certification for law enforcement personnel, 431.13, International Fire Service Accreditation Congress or IFSAC seal, Subchapter B, minimum standards for fire investigator certification, 431.201, minimum standards for fire investigation personnel, 431.203, minimum standards for fire investigator certification, 431.205, minimum standards for intermediate fire investigator certification, 431.207, minimum standards for advanced fire investigator certification, 431.209, minimum standards for master fire investigator certification, and 431.211, International Fire Service Accreditation Congress or ISAC seal for fire investigator.
Do you want to read that again?
No.
Just in case.
Members, on page 23 and again on page 24, what we're doing is we're updating some language there to make it more reflective of the reality of how it actually should be working today. We've had kind of an unusual system for a number of years now where someone, for instance, on page 23, someone who is an arson investigator who, say, no longer has their arson their peace officer, they qualify for a fire investigator certificate at the same level. What we've been doing, the practice has been that we have electronically issued the fire investigator, but in order for them to get a printed certificate, they would need to make application with the commission, complete with fee and the whole thing. They're applying for another certification. As we're moving here very quickly toward online applications and that kind of thing, we really needed to change this. So really all we're doing is we're removing the language that talks about the idea of getting a printed certificate and just saying if you want the certification, you just need to apply for it. You qualify for it, you just need to apply for it. So hopefully simplifying it and creating some more up-to-date language here.
Got anything? Got them? Nope. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? More grammatical correctness. We're good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So let's go back to 4, it looks like. Grace has returned.
Thank you, ma'am.
Easy enough.
Hopefully it's self-explanatory.
Yep.
Okay.
Everybody good?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll entertain a motion to approve agenda item number 4.
So moved.
All righty.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, item number seven, discussion and possible action regarding Chapter 443 Curriculum Manual, including but not limited to 443.1, Curriculum Approval by the Firefighter Advisory Committee, 443.3, Curriculum Approval by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, 443.5, Effective Date of New Curricula or Changes to Curricula Required by Law or Rule, 443.7, Effective Date of New Curricula or Changes or Revisions to Existing Curricula Which Are Voluntary, and 443.9, National Fire Protection Association Standard.
Whole lot of changes in these in this page and a half here, but it's really not doing anything more than we attempted to make, again, our language a little more reflective of the fact that we are not developing curricula for some of the disciplines, and we still are with some of our others. And also just try to clarify the language a little bit more, change the language to make it a little clearer as to what's expected. Happy to answer any questions if you have any on those.
I don't have any.
Anybody got anything?
Sure.
Ken's still reading.
I've read this several times. I'm just trying to...
Your motion to approve.
Make a motion.
Second.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? You guys are really dragging this meeting out. Stuff looks pretty easy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 8, discussion and possible action regarding Chapter 453, Hazardous Materials, Subchapter A, Minimum Standards for Hazardous Materials Technician, including but not limited to 453.1, Hazardous Materials Technician Certification, 453.3, Minimum Standards for Hazardous Materials Technical Certification, 453.5, Examination Requirements, and 453.7, International Fire Service Accreditation Congress or ISAC Seal. Subchapter B, Minimum Standards for Hazardous Materials Incident Commander, 453.201, Hazardous Materials Incident Commander Certification, 453.203, Minimum Standards for Hazardous Materials Incident Commander, and 453.205, Examination Requirements.
Members, on page 31, we're changing the language there in big letter A to reflect, even though we actually still have a curriculum sitting there that can be used for hazmat technician, this will be one of those ones that will be transitioned away from developing that here in the future. We felt like we could go ahead and change that language there, and it really doesn't, I don't think it negatively impacts it in any way. People can still use what's in our curriculum manual if they want to. On page 32, we were striking small letter B at the top because big letter B just above it, it's really kind of redundant based on the changes that we did there to big letter B. On page 33, doing the same thing on big letter A. And a little bit further down, number 4 and small letter B, we are striking those. Number 4 we're striking because it was a temporary provision that is now out of date, no longer offered. And then small letter B again, that's redundant language.
Motion.
I have a question, Tim. The number of hours is not being changed, or it depends on their own curriculum?
No, no. Now, there are still recommended hours in the curricula, various curricula. I know that's going to be a point of discussion. It has been actually recently, even among the commissioners, you know, as to what to do with that kind of a thing. You know, whether we have actually had a practice for a number of years where, although hours are recommended in the curriculum manual, the agency has been requiring 2/3. That a training program do 2/3 of the recommended hours. There's discussion about whether we are to continue with that or not. But as it stands right now, we haven't done anything with the curriculum manual. It's still the same.
Happy, Dono?
Yes.
As long as you're happy. Is there a motion?
I'll motion to approve.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion or any other questions? Not hearing any. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You know, if we keep cleaning up the language like this, we're not going to have meetings anymore. I mean, let's be careful. Government being efficient is not an acceptable practice. They prove it down the street every day, so.
We'll always find something to have a meeting.
Item number 9, discussion and possible action regarding Chapter 455, minimum standards for wildland fire protection certification, including but not limited to 455.1, minimum standards for wildland fire protection personnel, 455.3, minimum standards for basic wildland fire protection certification, 455.5, minimum standards for intermediate wildland fire protection certification, and 455.7, examination requirements.
One small change in this, based on those changes that you just saw in the curriculum manual, just changing it to a training program, removing the word curriculum. It's on page 35.
Any discussion?
Move to approve.
Motion to approve. Is there
second.
A second? Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item number 10, discussion of the 2016 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and inclusion in the annual report to be sent to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Take it away, Mark.
Good morning.
Morning.
I guess I would start with it's your page 43, the abstract. We had a total of 3,795 injuries reported in calendar year 2016, which is 74 more than last year. $834 occurred during fire suppression activities, and that's 22% of the total, which is almost exactly the same as last year. We had 21% of the injuries were in fire suppression last year. I think that the most remarkable thing about the report this year is how little it changed from last year's. And, you know, all the major injury activities, the percentages were almost identical to last year's. I think I would point out on page 47, again, EMS activities resulted in the highest number of injuries, but there were more serious injuries in fire suppression, and that's also consistent with last year.
I mean, again, serious injury is defined as one that causes a person to be off more than one duty period.
Yes. Yeah, and that's kind of, oftentimes we'll get a report of a cracked rib or a shoulder dislocation or something, and the department will tag it as serious, and it sounds serious, but it doesn't result in lost time. I don't know how guys come back the next day after a shoulder separation.
It's called light duty. Nobody wants to work it.
So they come back.
Cured overnight.
We're not making a judgment call on, whether we think the injury is serious or not. It's just, whether or not they missed time because of it. The finger cut with three stitches might make you lose a duty shift because you don't want to get infected or whatever. So,
Mark, remind us again what defines a critical injury.
A critical injury is where an injured worker is actually hospitalized. So, they go to the emergency room and they actually get admitted to the hospital and do an overnight stay.
Do you run into any confusion on the whole aspect of lost time? I know we've had some discussion in our city about what constitutes lost time, and it seems like there's different interpretations out there because we run into it with some. It's my understanding right now that lost time doesn't start until the shift after the shift that the injury happened on. And I think there's a certain understanding out there that the minute if you got hurt and you were sent home, that's when your lost time began. And it's my understanding, and somebody can correct me, please, but work comp doesn't recognize the remainder of that shift that you didn't finish as lost time, even though you weren't able to finish it. Lost time kicks in when you would have been there to report for the next duty shift. I didn't know if you'd seen any. We've had several conversations with our risk management department about that, trying to get everybody on the same page, and I didn't know if that was a confusing point, or if we may be wrong. I don't know, but after they've researched it, that's what we're getting from our risk management people, is the lost time thing doesn't even begin until that following shift.
Well, we define it as one full duty shift. So then
that's where the... All right.
Yeah, there's a more confusion about whether modified or light duty is counted as lost time. I had three or four questions during the year about that. And my guidance to departments is if you're having to fill in with another firefighter to cover that shift, the one is pulled in and he's doing something else, but if you're having to pay twice for that same shift, sure. Basically, that's... So we'll sometimes count modified lost duty as lost time. Okay. But we really leave that up to the department. Exposures. Last year we did kind of a deep dive on exposures and broke them down into different categories. I've done that again this year, but I'm not real comfortable with the numbers, so that'll change between the draft and the final.
Which page are you on?
This is just a supplement that I was working on. It would go behind exposures.
Do you have handouts? Do you have enough to hand out?
I do, but I haven't really reconciled the numbers yet, and there's some gaps there that I'm not real comfortable with. I missed something in this, but maybe I'll have that resolved before I present it to the commission. There was one exposure category that kind of caught my eye that it looked like TB exposures are up. We had 94 in 2013, 93 in 2014, 73 in 2015, 124 in 2016.
Where
is
that?
Page 58. So that number kind of caught my eye. And maybe just something for departments to be aware of. Seems like TB and meningitis and some of those sicknesses are bumping up to a level that
well, we a lot of hepatitis C, a lot of them are showing an increase here. I got a few comments, and I had to spend 20 minutes on the phone with Reedy this morning while he sat on the side of the road. So he was, and then he called back with some more. But the first thing that caught my eye in this is that we only had about 90% reporting. That seems kind of low. When we first started this, that number was even higher, and we were worried that we weren't getting 100, but we were actually getting 94, 95. as pointless as it may be, and a lot of these may be reporting, not reporting zeros, I almost wonder if we shouldn't send some kind of notification to the departments that we didn't get anything from, just reminding them of the noncompliance, encouraging them to do it. Because 90% does seem a little lower than what we should have. I think we should be better at it by now. We've been doing this for 7 years. I think it's seven, maybe eight. Now Mark's been doing it for, well, the whole time, but I guess for about four now.
He's three or four. So, would have been a year before.
Can you tie it to your compliance visits every 2 years? Could you do something like that? Mm-hmm.
Our compliance officers are actually pretty good about, you know, bringing it up. We have a report for the compliance officers that shows whether or not the department's reporting, and we do some. We see a bump after those visits.
I'm just wondering when they give you that. If you have something, you're in deficit, you've got to get that done before they actually clear you off of the book. Are they doing that? Are you actually saying you've got to do this before we actually give you a clean bill of health?
I think probably this one's on us. We haven't been as firm on our enforcement as we need to be, and we can do that. We can certainly do that. We'll follow up on these.
I suspect that some of it too is a result of turnover. Sure. Have a safety officer or training officer who's been doing it for years and years, and then there's a replacement, and it gets lost in the shuffle.
And I'm not trying to create more work, but maybe we just look and see if there's some that have been consistently not reporting the last few years, and maybe just give them a little reminder. I don't know. I guess the compliance officer's bringing it up. I always get a spotless review, so he never spends much time, but he's just so happy to come to Galveston. Mm-hmm, there's no problems.
Moving on. I have a couple questions.
All right, go ahead.
On the exposure list that we're looking at here, what would typically have been in that unknown category? It just says unknown. We had 147 unknown exposures. What would that... would be claiming they got exposed to something and then claiming it.
Yeah, usually that's kind of a backwards. There's an injury, but they don't know what the injury was the result of. And that can be anything from, I mean, we had 17 cancer reports. There's 14 in this report, but I got three late. That's more like a career-related injury than they know that they were exposed to something during their career that might have triggered the cancer. So, allergic reactions, there's a lot of those that the firefighter will put on his PPE. When he takes his PPE off, he'll notice that there's a rash.
And that's considered an exposure?
Yeah.
Because I know last year we talked a little bit about the cancer issue, because two things that jump off the page to me looking at the numbers here, and it's not anything on your end. I think it's on the reporting end. It's hard to believe as first responders in the state of Texas, not one single first responder was exposed to influenza. I think that would be an inaccurate statement just from my own department today. By the end of the day today, we would have had probably 25 people exposed to influenza in our department. So that's obviously not being documented. So we're failing to capture that on our end. But carcinogenic exposure still isn't even a category that you can check off. And I would argue with anybody that fought a car fire yesterday that they didn't have exposure to carcinogenic material. And my question is there an option for them to check that box or submit that information, or do they just throw it to you and you have to disseminate it?
That there isn't exposure undetermined category, and so that's where a lot of...
Well, so I know there's 147 unknowns, and I'm curious, if I was to ask, could I see those 147 unknowns, what would the typical story be? Would it be stuff like you said, allergic reactions, or... I'm just trying to think of somebody that came to me and said they had an exposure. And the question would be, what did you get exposed to? And we have a pretty significant list here, but what's an unknown exposure? I'm not arguing. I'm just confused as to what that would have actually been. While on the other end, we had zero influenza. And I'm wondering if some of those would have been flu exposure.
No, I think it's probably more like blood and body fluids. You know, they knew that the victim was ill and sick, but they don't know if there was a something that could have been communicable.
But there is a body fluids category
and
as well.
And a blood category too. Yeah. And some of that we do pull out of the descriptions, and that's why I said I'm not real comfortable with the deep dive stuff that I'm looking at. I think some of that will be resolved. You know, we can look at that closer, but you know, just like needle sticks, you know, you pull out a glucose, you're putting the sharp in the container, and you get a needle stick. That might be an undetermined. Yeah, you know, sometimes those are clean needles. You know, it's like as soon as you get it uncapped, you stick yourself with it, and it's like, you know.
That would need a category on its own, mm-hmm. honestly.
I think the whole idea with exposures is, it seems to me, very problematic to try to chase that down. I mean, like you say, every time you go out, you're potentially exposed, you know, so are we going to hope to track that? Or are we only talking about those times where there was an obvious exposure of some kind that occurred that they felt was worthy of reporting? I mean, it's hard to know here. It's hard for us on this side to get a handle on it as well as to exactly how to manage that one. Much different than an injury. An injury is an injury, but an exposure may have occurred and it may not have occurred.
Right.
How does this format parallel with the federal, any federal reports that are out there? I mean, do we follow pretty much right behind theirs where we could fit our numbers right into theirs?
No.
No. I don't know that there's any.
NFPA obviously does some, but it's been way back at the very beginning of all this that I even looked at that. So.
I just wonder how they categorize things.
Seemed like last time I looked at it, we were perhaps more comprehensive in what we're doing than NFPA.
Yeah. Okay. You good, Daniel?
Yeah, I was just curious as to how we're doing.
Chairman Reedy did have one other concern on page 49. He feels that there could be a better word for broken, or it talks about broken bones or broken neck and spine. I think he's leaning more towards the paramedic term of fractures. And I told him I would relay that, and I know he's going to listen to the tape, so I'll get that on there. I don't want a bad report from him tomorrow after he's listened. So
looks like on the cancer reporting, I mean, we got 14. I mean, the first year to do it, kind of a slow start, but at least we got a few reporting it. Now we should see that increase, and that might even increase along with the exposure reporting over the next few years, the way things are going. I mean, that's probably going to be an area that we get more in the weeds. You know, we talk about we're a little deeper right now than NFPA. I think we'll continue to see that increase.
Mm-hmm. So on that report, I have a question about where it just says cancer diagnosis. It's just you didn't get enough information to steer it into a particular area that was affected, or okay.
That component of this reporting is purely voluntary.
Sure.
And we certainly want to be very careful about confidentiality issues and that sort of thing. So.
But I would be interested in, you know, if we had that information of seeing where the trends were headed and if they're in line with the national studies that are going on out there.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, I think awareness, you know, letting departments know that we are looking for the information,
right.
That's going to help. Yeah, like on hearing loss, if you go back to that page 49.
There's a lot of departments that have a big cancer problem right now, and we're not seeing it so much with our members as we are with our members' wives. Just in the last year, we've had four different wives basically diagnosed with similar forms of cancer, and that's caused us to start looking into some of that. I mean, there got to be some correlation. Talk about bringing this stuff home and washing your clothes with everybody else's. But locally, we're looking into that. So.
And retirees, too, is going to be hard to capture.
Oh, yeah.
Back to, as far as awareness goes, if you look at the hearing loss chronic on table 6, it's on page 49 also, 724735 this year. Yep. And I think that's just awareness that, we're collecting that information.
Chairman Reedy's wish on the broken bones, we'll just change that term to fractures?
Probably suffice. I think all in all, this looked like a very daunting task when we started this 7 or 8 years ago, but I do think we're getting good information. And no, it seems like every year we get a little more. If we could just...
It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Somehow we've got to improve the reporting piece of it. That's a challenge.
We'll work on that. We'll work on that.
And Tim and I were talking about, too, that I think a lot of it has to do with the reporting tool. If it was more available to department administrators, I think probably the only people that see that regularly are the people who do the reporting, because they have to go and log into FIDO, and then they log into the injury reporting part. And who has rights to see that, things like that. One of our programmers is very good at... trying to pull like automated reports out so that when you log in, the injury report first screen will tell you, you have these serious injuries open. Can you review them and see if those workers are back to work? And just making it easier for departments to see the information, their own information, I think will help a lot. There was one concern I had about the fatalities. We only had one fatality reported to the system, and we know of 4 LODDs that occurred. 2 of those, we wouldn't have gotten reports because we don't regulate the departments. One of those, they didn't file the fatality with us because it didn't go through their workers' comp office. And our rules say if there's a first report of injury on it, and there wasn't one, so we didn't get it that way. So we're aware of those, but... it's just kind of a
limitation of the system.
And of the fatalities, we know that 3 were medical conditions and 1 was a vehicle a collision.
Just back to the whole awareness, I think. Just while it's tied to the first reports, I think we do a better job of educating everybody, and they'd probably do better at reporting it. I don't really see that there's any action from us. This is just for our review.
Has the practice been for advisory committee to recommend to the commissioners on this thing? I'm trying to remember what we've done in the past.
To develop recommendations for departments.
Well, we definitely need to do that. I'll even if you don't take any action on it, we need to be thinking about. I mean, that's really part of our charge.
Yeah.
Is to develop recommendations that go in the final report. And so
I suppose we could just vote to accept it for the recommendation of continuing to find improvements, maybe work on the ones that aren't reporting, encourage them. Leave that to the
committee. And I would throw in a thank you to the departments who do, continue to do it and report regularly. Some of them work really hard at keeping these up. So.
Are the cancer reports submitted separately?
It's through the same system, but,
it's the injury reporting person when they log into FIDO into that module. It's there.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten involved recently in my department with the cancer education and awareness, and then the department I work in right now, we have 17 known members on duty battling cancer. Now, some of them didn't occur last year. Some of them began 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. But with that number just within my own organization, and then I see 14 statewide was reported last year, I think it's probably 10 times, if not 50 times higher than that. So I guess the question I'm asking is, how are we missing that? And it's not that we're missing it. How are the departments failing to report that, or why?
Let me handle that one. I think we have got to be very careful. As much as we want this data, we have to be very careful about, for lack of a better term, mission creep. Where we start not simply asking for, but requiring information that statute never really authorized us to do. And I think that's part of this. And I know we had that discussion initially last year when we first started talking about this cancer thing. We can put together any kind of infrastructure we need to gather the information. It's the question really becomes what do we now expect of departments out there? And so because this has been purely a voluntary thing, for fear that we were perhaps even at least considering requiring things that maybe we weren't authorized to require. My suggestion is that this committee probably needs to have a discussion with the commission board about this. There needs to be a bigger conversation about what now currently exists in the system, what we're doing with it, how do we deal with things like exposures, is this something we want to continue developing, and exactly what it is we should or should not be doing based on 419. I think, again, I just caution that we need to be very, very careful about that moving forward.
What would be the biggest downside or the worst case scenario moving forward?
The biggest downside? Doing things that we're not authorized to do, requiring things of departments that we're not really authorized to require. I think we need to be real careful with that.
Okay.
And at some point, you probably get some pushback from folks using HIPAA as their crutch. There's just not that much that we can require them to give us.
I would suggest at some point here in the near future, maybe a joint workshop of some kind, you know, including a few of the members from your committee, a few commissioners, and other parties that you think would be beneficial to the conversation, and really do a review on this. I mean, really has just been staff trying to put this thing together, and, you know, Mark has been fantastic with this thing. But we at the same time, we don't want to be working alone on this. Mm-hmm. And as much as we appreciate the feedback during the meetings, I think it would be beneficial to all of us to spend some serious time in the program and decide where we want to go with it.
You know, this might be a good topic to maybe we send forward a request to discuss this at their workshop. We're doing these workshops now, and it seems to be working better. But there's no action to be taken. It would just be a discussion.
Right.
It's not going to impact this year's report, but we could use this year's report as a guide to start looking at next time. And maybe we could ask for a joint discussion at maybe their workshop. Mm-hmm. That way it doesn't tie up an entire meeting. But it seems like those workshops are working pretty well, and then they're spending a lot of time here.
Yeah. So. To me, they're very beneficial, and I think they are for the commissioners as well. Their next workshop is in July. You may want to make mention of that, too.
Yes, I believe I'll be standing in for reading for the report next month, so I'll make a note to bring that up and ask for that.
Yeah, I remember we had the same conversation, and I think, Tim, we talked to some people over at DWIG about how they reported these things in their system. And we're supposed to work with DWIG on what they receive for their injury claims. That's kind of the data set. Mm-hmm. And it depends on which firefighters and emergency responders make workers' comp claims for cancer. And so it's not all the time. Apparently their health system doesn't always line up with their workers' comp system, so it'll pop up on their insurance that, hey, they're getting medical treatment, this or that, but it might not be a workers' comp claim, depending on how it falls. It was kind of detailed in how their system is structured, too. So if we're going to have the conversation again, we'll try to loop DWIG in again. But it was difficult from what I remember.
I certainly don't want to sound like I'm opposed to doing this. I would love to see. I mean, we need to be a part of the conversation specifically with regards to cancer. You know, that is becoming a nationwide conversation happening. We need to be a part of that. And we need to lead where we can and certainly gather information as we can. But in my mind, finding ways to do it that will provide useful information that keeps us within the bounds of what we can and should do is daunting, to say the least. So, again, I think a bigger conversation would be worth having.
On the cancer reporting, is it only off the initial? Do they follow up with if it's somebody who's was diagnosed with cancer treatment and they were told they were cancer free, and then 2 years later, if it comes back stronger, can they can't report it again?
They could if they want to.
Well, but our information is anonymized, so there's no way for them to look in our system.
That was one of the concerns Dwight had too, with the number of claims and which fire departments reported the claims, is you might be able to identify who it was based on, you know, if it's a small department, this person was out on these days, that type of thing. But I mean, the data's out there, but it's hard to get it all together, and then with the HIPAA laws and then working with another agency and what we can require and get, it's kind of like you got a lot of moving pieces.
Does anybody see any need for any action? Do we want to make a motion to accept the report?
Yeah, I'm motion to accept the report.
Second.
Motion and a second, and we'll make sure and bring up when we give our report next month that we'd like to have a discussion, in-depth discussion about it, where we're going with it.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, we appreciate
thank
all
you
your
very
efforts,
much.
Mark. Yeah, Mark and
thank
everybody
you.
Else.
Yeah, thank you.
A privilege.
It's been as daunting and growing as we anticipated it. So, but it's good information, too.
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Well, we have reached.
Item number 11, discussion and possible action on setting future meeting dates, locations, and agenda items.
This is Deb's agenda item, so just tell us what we're doing.
I had June the 29th.
June the 29th. September the 7th. December the 14th.
And they're all in this room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
December 14th, for some reason, is blocked out on a lot of hotels in town for some reason.
Everybody's coming to town for our meeting.
That's what it is. Okay. Makes sense.
Who knows around here?
Yeah.
There's always something.
I'm sorry. I got the June 29th and the December 14th. What was the other one?
September the 7th.
Thank you.
Any agenda item requests? Those seem to be streaming in rapidly as we get there. Number 12.
I move to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Adjourn. It just keeps getting harder.